to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law, with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Voter ID requirements are one of the biggest hot-button issues in election law today, with 38 states now mandating that voters show some form of ID to vote. Though there have been many legal challenges to these laws, there's also an effort to ensure voters have the IDs they need. One group, Vote Riders, has been at the forefront of this effort. I'm pleased to welcome Lauren Kunis, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director of Vote Riders, to learn how Vote Riders educates voters and helps them obtain IDs, which impacts not only their ability to vote, but many other aspects of their lives as well. Lauren, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the origins of Vote Riders. Your founder, Kathleen Unger, was basically a concerned citizen living in Los Angeles who thought she could make a difference and make an impact. So how did it all start?
So Vote Riders was founded in 2012. We are going to be celebrating our 12th anniversary as an organization this April. Kathleen Unger, our founder, who was a leading attorney in the corporate sector, often says that Vote Riders was born out of outrage. Voting rights started as a volunteer activity for her and became her passion. And something that she saw in years of doing volunteer voter protection work, when she was fielding calls from voters on the hotline, when she was answering questions, when she was digging deep into statutes, she saw how complicated and confusing voter ID laws could be for voters. And she also saw that in the field, it was really underaddressed in voter education. And finally, she saw that there was no organization out there that was helping voters get the ID they needed to vote at scale. So Vote Riders was set up as an organization that was going to meet those unaddressed needs, informational barriers, as well as helping eligible voters meet the financial and technical and transportation barriers that were keeping them from getting IDs that were increasingly required to vote. I will say, I don't think even Kathleen could have imagined the rising need for her work. You know, when she founded this organization in 2012, a handful of states had voter ID laws. As you mentioned, we're now at 38 states. You know, importantly, in 2013, the year after Vote Riders was founded, there was a dramatic weakening of the Voting Rights Act at the Supreme Court level with the Shelby decision, and we have seen voter ID laws spike since then. There's been another big spike in voter ID laws since 2020 that I'm sure we'll talk about later as we talk about all the challenges heading into 2024.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Vote Riders starting in 2012 is that the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision in 2008, a case called Crawford versus Marion County, that refused to strike down Indiana's voter ID law, which was, I think, was seen as kind of the new wave or new generation of strict ID laws. So states, you know, slowly started passing them. Vote Riders begins in 2012, and then, as you said, after the Shelby County decision in 2013, many states have continued to increase the ID laws being passed. I mean, literally the day of Shelby County, when that decision came down, both Texas and North Carolina announced that it would be implementing some strict laws. Or I guess North Carolina was passed a little bit after that decision came down. But that leads to, I think, an important point, which is that voter ID laws come in all different shapes and flavors, right? I mean, some states have kind of mild requirements. Some states we refer to as stricter. So walk us through a little bit about the differences in state laws and how that impacts your efforts at Vote Riders.
100%. And it's a really important distinction to make. So I'm glad that you are kicking us off on that point. So 38 states have some form of voter ID law in place today. So this means that voters are required or requested to show a specific form of accepted ID when they're voting in person or by mail. But there's a ton of variation within those 38 states. So the most inclusive voter ID states are ones that give voters lots of different options when it comes to an accepted ID at the polls. So these these are states where you can present a photo ID, like a driver's license, or maybe a non-photo ID, like a utility bill. Some states in the non-strict category also give an option to vote a regular ballot without showing an ID by signing a form like an affidavit.
And give us a sense, which states are kind of the less strict or the milder forms compared to the strictest states?
A good example is Michigan, I would say, where there are lots of different options and you can sign a form at the polls to cast a regular ballot without taking any additional steps to make sure your ballot counts. Virginia has a similar law where you can sign a form even if you don't or forget to bring an accepted form of ID to the polls.
And actually, Kentucky has that as well. Mm-hmm. I was involved in some of the debates in 2020 about Kentucky's bill, and that's one of the things that I said, you know, really needed to be put in there was a mechanism for voters who didn't have an ID to sign an affidavit under penalty of perjury, of course, but then get to vote a regular ballot like anybody else. And so what are the strictest states? What kind of laws are those?
So the strictest ID states are ones where you cannot cast a regular ballot at the polls without showing a specific and accepted form of ID. And the strictest states within those require a photo ID. So they don't offer an option like a non-photo ID, like a utility bill that some folks like to use. So in these states, if you can't provide the specific form of ID at the polls or don't provide it, you have to vote a provisional ballot and then take additional steps to make sure that your ballot counts.
And a state like Texas is a good example of that kind of an ID law.
Georgia is one. Ohio is another one that passed one of the country's strictest photo ID laws just last year ahead of some really important races statewide in 2023. But I will put in a shameless plug here. It's confusing. I think about these laws all day, every day, and even I don't have them memorized. So if anyone goes to our website at voteriders.org/state rules, you can see a rundown of what the rules are for voting in person and by mail when it comes to ID in your state, and also see how your state stacks up to other states when it comes to how strict or how inclusive your voter ID law might be.
So what's the big deal here? I mean, most of us have an ID in our wallet or our bag. Surveys show that an overwhelming majority of Americans support voter ID laws. So, you know, why does an organization like yours need to exist? And kind of what's the big deal? I mean, everyone has an ID, right?
No, everyone does not have an ID. And that's the first thing that I always like to lift up. And this is a comment that we get a lot in the course of our work at Vote Riders. We actually just released new research a couple weeks ago, partnering with the Center for Democracy and Civic Engagement at the University of Maryland and the Brennan Center for Justice. That was the first national study of voter ID access in America today in almost 20 years. And I can share with you the link to our full write-up, but some of the top lines are that 14.5% of voting age Americans lack an unexpired photo ID, like a state ID card or a driver's license that has their current name and address on it. Looking at current census numbers, that was upwards of 34.5 million voters. That percentage gets much higher when we look at youth. Age was actually the single most powerful predictor of whether or not an individual had that type of unexpired and current photo ID. You know, young people move more often, they're more transient, they attend college and university out of state. And there was also a lot of intersectionality when it comes to accessing IDs. You know, Black and brown voters lacked that form of ID at greater rates than white peers. And young Black and brown voters in particular were the most likely to lack ID. Another thing I really want to emphasize when it comes to the big deal about voter ID, and this is corroborated in our recent research as well, voter ID laws cause an enormous amount of confusion. And that confusion in and of itself can be a deterrent from people going to the polls. It can be intimidating. We found that 55% of voters in strict photo ID states, like the Georgias of the world, didn't know that they needed this form of ID to vote successfully. And on the flip side, a significant percentage of voters in non-voter ID states, like, you know, where I live in DC, for example, thought they actually would need to bring voter ID to the polls in order to cast a ballot. Voter ID laws are also different for voting in person or by mail. So they cause a ton of confusion that is also a barrier to exercising your freedom to vote.
And one thing I think you said, which bears emphasis, is that some people are self-disenfranchising, essentially, right? They're choosing not to show up because they think, well, I don't have the right ID and I don't want to have to deal with the hassle of showing up without it. And studies show that often those people actually do have the ID that would comply. And again, on the flip side, you know, listeners might think, you know, well, who doesn't have a driver's license in today's society? Well, you know, it's people who live in the city, who rely on public transportation, who literally don't need a driver's license in their everyday lives. You know, you mentioned the demographics of people who don't have IDs. And this is starting to sound kind of partisan to me, right? I mean, the groups that you mentioned, minority individuals, young voters, demographics show tend to skew Democratic. And I think there's a general sense about ID laws that this is a partisan fight. Republicans support strict ID laws, Democrats oppose them because it's Democratic-leaning voters who are less likely to have a compliant ID. So how does the politics of this play into the debate and into your work?
Yeah, look, I mean, we just have to push back on that argument. And this is something I do professionally, but also personally. At Vote Riders, we are a nonpartisan organization. We offer free and publicly available ID resources and help to eligible voters, regardless of political ideology, partisan affiliation, or anything related to that. I mean, I think it's a real shame that these nonpartisan issues like voting rights, which tie into the very basis of our democratic republic, have become partisan issues. This is a somewhat recent development. You know, it wasn't always this way. And I'm personally, since I know the title of the show is Democracy Optimist, I'm holding out hope that it won't always be this way. But, you know, honestly, until then, our values at Vote Riders, when it comes to this work, have remained constant for the 12 years that we've been around, and they will remain constant going forward. We are here to protect and expand the freedom to vote. And if there are certain political parties or actors in the here and now or anyone else who doesn't agree with that, I see that as, you know, not our area of concern. I view our work above all as patriotic and not partisan in the least.
You know, letting people vote should not be considered a partisan issue. I think is the message that you're giving. One thing that's always impressed me about Vote Riders' story and frankly surprised me is that the work you do helps people in their everyday lives. You know, it's not just about voting, right? Not having an ID makes lives difficult for people. Talk a little bit about that for us.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I'll be honest, I've worked in voting rights my whole life, and I understood the barriers that voter ID laws placed in front of eligible citizens at the ballot box. But I personally did not have lived experience that helped me understand or wrap my head around how important an ID is for other aspects of your life. For so many of the people we assist, and I've learned this in starting to work at Vote Riders, an ID helps them access better employment opportunities in the formal sector, more stable housing for themselves and their family, life-saving medical care. And in a growing number of states, if you're pulled over by law enforcement, you also need to provide an ID. We do a lot of what we call site-based work at Vote Riders. And this is work hosted by partner organizations in the community, meeting voters where they're at, with sort of more non-traditional voter engagement partners like food banks and shelters and employment agencies. And through that partner-based community organizing work, we really understand the sort of multi-layered nature of our work at Vote Riders. And that's one of the reasons I love our work so much and why I'm so proud to be with this organization. We are building the electorate with equity, but we're also at the same time, through these services we provide, contributing to greater racial equity and social justice and, you know, helping people get the ID they need to vote, but also survive and thrive and in a virtuous circle have a say on these same policy issues at the ballot box.
Yeah, one of the things I remember reading was that many homeless shelters actually require you to provide an ID, which is sort of crazy. I think, you know, if these people are down and out in their luck and, you know, they don't have an ID for voting, well, you know, they need an ID just to get the core services that they need to get them back up on their feet. And Vote Riders helps with that in addition to obviously helping them vote on Election Day. Now, you mentioned that 38 states now have ID laws, and that number has grown a lot. So it seems like your work is getting harder and harder every year. Are you optimistic about voting in elections in spite of that challenge that you face?
I am. I will say, to your point, 38 states have ID laws. And importantly, since 2020 alone, 17 states have passed new or stricter ID laws. So I'm very clear-eyed about the need to get out there early and often and in a big way and scale our work to meet these rising challenges. You know, a lot of voters go to the polls in presidential election years, and that's it. So the rules of the game have changed since 2020 in many different states for tens of millions of voters. But I am optimistic. I think that is the only way to be. And what keeps me optimistic is the success stories I hear from our staff and our volunteers and our partners in the field every day that really speaks to people's firm commitment and desire to vote. This year, especially, despite the mounting barriers to the ballot box.
So let me ask you that kind of final core question, which relates to everything you do. Why should people vote? I mean, especially, you know, you said people are going to vote in the presidential election this year. But if you're not in one of the key swing states, it sort of feels like your vote doesn't matter. So why should people vote?
There are so many reasons to vote. Voting is your chance to have a say, and it's your say on everything from the big picture policy, top of the ticket, but also there are really important decisions to be made at the state and local level. You know, a lot of times, as you noted, if you're not in a state that is in play in the presidential race, what should drive you to the ballot box in addition to, you know, fulfilling your democratic right? As a citizen, is having a say on who is elected to the school board and whether or not the pothole on your street should get fixed. And lots of important issues are decided in every single election. I always tell folks as well, too many people worked too hard to get us to this point to sit out any election.
I'm so glad you focused also on state and local elections, because often people overlook the importance of those. And obviously, getting an ID into someone's hand lets them vote in every election on the ballot. Lauren Kunis is the chief executive officer and executive director of Vote Riders, which is doing such important work in many states getting IDs into people's hands. You can learn more about them at voteriders.org. Lauren, thanks so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you.
Josh, let's talk a little bit more about those voter ID laws and how they impact certain communities. How many states have these laws on their books?
Yeah, so as we discussed with Lauren, there's 38 states that have some form of an ID law that requires voters to present identification when they go to vote or when they submit an absentee ballot, with varying levels of strictness, varying requirements about what kinds of IDs count and what happens if you show up to the polls without an ID. Some require a government-issued photo ID, and the ID can't be expired. Other more mild laws just say you need something like a bank statement or utility bill. And of course, these laws create barriers for some people in the general public. But I want to highlight today the unique challenges that one particular group might face on Election Day. For those whose ID doesn't match their name or gender, voter ID laws can make casting a ballot much more difficult. According to a recent survey, approximately 30% of transgender voters reported that they were a target of verbal harassment after presenting an ID with a name or gender marker that did not align with their outward gender presentation. The National Center for Transgender Equality has compiled an infographic called Voting While Trans that includes a couple of checklists for transgender voters, but honestly, it's good tips for all voters. The first checklist is for the months ahead of Election Day to ensure your voter registration and ID are up to date. The second one is for when you head to the polls and provides information about critical resources to turn to in the event that a voter encounters any problems when voting. Now, some polling places will have a volunteer attorney present or someone else that can assist voters. But if there's no one around who can help, there's also the National Election Protection Hotline that you can call. It's 1-866 our vote, and they have volunteers standing by that can help address various issues.
Okay, I'm building up a folder, this next item, so that I have all these great facts at hand when I'm in conversations with friends and family about the election. Your fun election facts. Give us another one of those.
So I mentioned the National Election Protection Hotline. That's 1-866-OUR-VOTER, 1-866-687-8683. Who are you actually calling when you dial that number? Well, it's a little more complicated than you might think. There are actually four separate hotlines, one for English speakers, one for Spanish speakers, one for Arabic speakers, and another one for speakers of Asian languages. And they're all run by nonpartisan voting rights coalition called Election Protection. The English line is managed by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Since its founding in 2002, the Election Protection Initiative has become one of the largest voter protection coalitions in the country. Calls are fielded by trained volunteers from a collection of over 300 national, state, and local partner organizations. I found this really interesting statistic from the Minneapolis office of Dorsey & Whitney. It's a law firm that's been one of the partners in the coalition since this all began in 2002. John Van Horn, an attorney at the firm, explained in a 2022 interview with his local news station that the hotline provides comprehensive assistance at all stages of voting, no matter how simple or complex. And, you know, he says, a team of around 55 lawyers and paralegals standing by on election day. In recent years, the election protection hotlines have become really indispensable for many voters. In the 2020 general election, it received over 230,000 calls nationwide.
Wow. What's one thing we can do to support democracy?
If you thought what Vote Riders was doing was interesting, you can volunteer with them. Check them out at www.voteriders.org/volunteer. They have in-person opportunities in Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin. And if you don't live in one of those states, they have various remote opportunities as well. For the lawyers listening, Vote Riders also maintains a robust pro bono legal program for those interested in donating their legal services to further Vote Riders' efforts.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host. Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.